Darnett versus Global Maps. Mr. Spathis.
Morning, Your Honors. My name is George Spathis. Together with my colleague, Brian Graham, it is our pleasure to appear before this court on behalf of the appellant, who I will refer to collectively as Global or Global Maps. May it please the court. I am before the court today seeking reversal of the district court's decision to deny a stay of a mandatory injunction order pending appeal.
Could I just ask you a very quick question, Mr. Spathis?
Certainly.
Is Global currently in full compliance with the injunction?
It is, indeed. With the injunction order, it is. The injunction order was a mandatory order that permanently altered the status quo and threatened Global Maps with irreparable
harm. And so what do you want by way of relief?
I'd like to see the district court's order reversed. I'd like a stay pending appeal.
No, concretely, what do you want?
I'd like the numbers ported back.
You want the numbers?
I'd like
what would you do with the numbers when you got them back? Would you resell them? Is that what you do?
No. I would either use them to provide service to StarNet. I would either use them to remote call forward numbers for StarNet, but I would use them so I could close the blocks of numbers so that I wouldn't put another 750,000 numbers at risk to porting.
Don't the new federal rules that allow the portability of telephone numbers when changing cellular carriers and allowing customers to transport their home telephone numbers to their cellular carriers signal a change of FCC position regarding the public interest in telephone number portability?
I don't think so, Your Honor. Before the recent order that came out, there was another order in June that dealt with wireline-to-wireline porting, and the FCC did not take up the issue of public interest at that time. I think wireless and wireline-to-wireless is an apples-to-orange comparison. Because on the one hand, you have a service that is fixed to a point in space, a physical connection. And on the other hand, you have a service that is, by design, not fixed. And I think the FCC has taken...
I don't understand that.
Okay.
When a wireline carrier has to port the number to a cellular carrier...
Correct.
It hands the number off at a physical location, cellular carrier's physical location. And that physical location will be a different place from the place where the call is terminated to the original landline customer. So I have the same question as Judge Rovner. Doesn't the FCC's new decision mean that carriers now have to port to different physical locations, provided it's in the same general calling area?
Not outside of the context of wireline to wireless.
Yeah, but why would that context matter? Once the FCC decides that you have to port to a different address, you have to terminate at a different address, it seems to me the game is up.
Because, by definition, the wireless carrier is not tied to a physical location. For instance...
Exactly. So your basic argument here, which is that porting must be tied to a physical location, is no longer the view of the FCC.
I believe it is the view of the FCC in a wireline-to-wireline context.
But why should that matter?
Because that's the service that is at issue here. My wireless telephone, I can live in Kenosha, I can choose an 847 wireless exchange.
That's completely irrelevant to you. The former landline carrier isn't providing cellular service. The FCC's obligation to the landline carrier is to terminate the call at a different physical location, and that's going to be the call center maintained by the wireless carrier. Right?
Yes.
What the wireless carrier does and where the customer is are all irrelevant. The landline carrier's obligation is just to terminate in a different place. So that's the genesis of my question. Once you have an obligation to terminate in a different place, provided it's in the same call rating area, isn't the jig up?
I don't believe so, because you route wireline calls differently than you route cellular.
All right, let me ask the question in a different way.
Okay.
Is there any way that Global NAPS can comply with the FCC's decision requiring portability to wireless numbers and still have all of its blocks closed to porting?
Well, I suppose if somebody who asks for service that was once terminated to modems to be transferred to cellular numbers that originate in the same rate center, I believe then the FCC rules, or at least I seem to be
meaning. The FCC rules require Global NAPS to do that, and therefore one might think your blocks must be open to porting.
If that becomes
and
the case.
And if that's the concept, if what's at stake in this case is whether your number blocks are open to porting or closed to porting, I mean, once again, it seems to me that game is up.
Well,
they are open to porting.
Right. But this is not a, again, for purposes of wireless, where you're talking about individual numbers getting ported to, for instance, your home wireline going to a wireless number. That is a very different, I think, animal than what we currently have here, which is wholesale blocks of service. And
you could explain that more basic that I don't understand. So I understand why you might want to get your numbers back from Starnet in order to resell them, including reselling them to Starnet. But I don't understand this business of opening blocks. What's that about?
Blocks are numbers are assigned generally in 10,000 blocks.
So you have 10,000 blocks? Is that?
Well, we have more than 10,000 blocks.
No, I understand.
The number
of blocks of 10,000.
Correct. The numbers at issue, for instance, that Starnet uses came out of 153 different 10,000 blocks of numbers.
And how many is it using? How many lines did you rent to it?
Starnet used somewhere between 400 and 450.
And they came out of these different blocks?
153 different blocks,
right.
All of which have 10,000 numbers in a block.
Right.
So it really impacts, there are, Council has correctly pointed out, there are some instances where you use 1,000 blocks. That's not an issue in this case. It really involves opening up.
But what does opening up mean? They have this 153 lines. How does that affect the other, 150,000 or whatever it is?
153 blocks, in order to port 400 numbers, 153 blocks have to be open to porting, and that is you change the native code in the NPAC database to say these are now portable numbers. Once you open them and port numbers away, you cannot close
them.
But
now who's going to do the porting?
The porting is done by a carrier opening a, for instance, in this case, these three new carriers opened subscriptions. Once the codes were open to porting, they went to the same entity, Neustar, which also manipulates the NPAC database, and they asked for a subscription for those numbers, and Neustar then facilitates the porting of those numbers. You have if you see that there is a somebody is opening a subscription for your number, you can object, but Neustar has a code of neutrality, and so if a period of time goes by, they will go ahead and port those numbers, which is akin to, for lack of a better, it is what we've in the consumer side kind of have referred to as slamming. But once those numbers are open, there is a lot easier mobility of that number, and the carrier may or may not have an ability.
And so, if these other carriers port your numbers, do you get a fee or?
No.
Mr. Spacis, let me take you back for a minute because maybe you can help me out. I'm a little confused on a technical issue, I guess, because initially Global claimed that in order for it to port the 450 numbers used by Starnet, it would be forced to make between 200 and 250 blocks of numbers opening to porting. Which, would then leave 2 million to 2.5 million numbers open to porting. But later in your reply brief, you said that it only had to that Globe only had to port 153 blocks. Where's the discrepancy? What's that about?
I think the initial estimate of 250 was, or 225, whatever it was an estimate based on, there were generally two numbers per block. And so I think there was a quick estimate done. I believe that the later number, which is a smaller, more conservative number, is the accurate number, which also ties into actual usage.
So between your original brief and your reply brief, you learned all of this?
From the time in the response, in one of the responses or one of the motions, there was questions raised as to whether this was a precise calculation. I don't know how to do it. I relied on my clients, obviously, to go back and actually look at and do a physical count of the numbers and what codes they came out of. And in some of the instances, there were more than two numbers per block. So they came up with a count of 153 blocks.
Well, let me just say that it made me wonder, and forgive me, but whether or not, you know, you were somewhat prone to a bit of hyperbole regarding the potential harm here.
I apologize if that's the inference that was drawn. In this case, it is, I don't believe it's hyperbole to be concerned over 1.5 million numbers, half of which, 750,000 roughly, are in use. But it was an overstatement at the time to believe that it was the 2 million or 2.5 million numbers.
But isn't the cat out of the bag? What would reversing the injunction do for you?
Well, the cat is out of the bag with respect to StarNet's numbers, but it's not with respect to the other 735,000 numbers that are in use and another 770,000 numbers that really now can't be used because they are open to porting.
What do you mean they can't be used?
Global's not going to use a number that a carrier can come in and essentially slam away from it by just offering lower price service.
I don't understand that. Okay. If you're not planning to offer the numbers, you'd better give them back to the FCC immediately.
Well, it's not that we're not going to use the numbers. Those are the last numbers that they would use if they had other numbers available to them. Why would you put at risk a number if you had other numbers that were still closed? But there are 735,000 that are in use right now, separate and apart from those that StarNet is using, that now become portable.
What authority do you have for does Global have for the proposition that it has an absolute right to refuse porting?
The rules and regulations of the FCC, Your Honor.
But the FCC doesn't require porting. The FCC doesn't forbid it, that's all.
The FCC has said mandating porting is not, mandating location porting is not in the public interest at this time, has not ever come out and said it's in the public interest, and has left to the carrier the choice.
This just brings us back to where at least Judge Rogner and I began. Your definition of location porting is any porting that requires termination at a physical address other than the original one. And it looks to me, at least, like the FCC's rules on wireline to wireless porting require termination at a different physical address. So the FCC doesn't look like it shares your definition of the limits on porting.
I believe it does. I believe it has made an exception when you're going wireless to wireline, but I don't believe, or wireline to wireless, but I don't believe they have revisited the wireline to wireline rules that they promulgated in 1996.
Well, what would be the basis for any difference? People move a great deal. If they move in the same area code, why shouldn't they be able to take their number there?
I believe it's just the burdens that it imposes on the carrier when there's physical connections and the manner
in which... What burden? I don't understand.
The manner in which... The manner in which the network is configured. I mean, Global Maps, in reliance on what the FCC, the rights that the FCC has given it, has created a network that is one-way traffic has not taken steps to become LNP capable, and now, because under these circumstances porting was mandated, it has now forced it to do something that is not built into its business model. They have rated their calls. They have set up their tolls in a manner that contemplated...
Not a physical, so you wouldn't have to make anything. You're talking about just changing your pricing system.
Correct.
Nothing physical involved.
No,
you don't own the lines to the people's houses.
No, the physical connection to the modem is a very simple one.
Let me ask you just one more question. Is there some shortage? Is there a shortage of numbers? Is that a problem?
I have seen...
Odd, but...
I am not going to state, Your Honor, today that there is a shortage of numbers that drives a concern here. I have seen in some
markets... Other than the fact that Chicago has had to have 4 new area codes added in the last 5 years because ran out of numbers. That's because Global Maps was holding numbers off the market and refusing to assign them to customers.
I don't believe that's the case.
That's why everybody had to reprint their stationery in Chicago with different area codes, because Global Maps was hoarding numbers.
Global Maps doesn't provide service in Chicago. Plus, Global Maps, when their codes were closed, Global Maps had no reservations about assigning numbers. It's only when you open the codes that it would require some sort of safeguarding. But I have seen that in certain markets there are rationing of numbers. I don't know that that's the case in the markets that are an issue in this case.
Do you have any idea, in the months since the injunction, how many customers have been lost?
From global customers?
Yeah.
I don't know that any have been lost.
Well, but, I mean, you claimed that all of this is opening the doors to competing carriers to induce customers with portable numbers away from you. So,
my logical answer to that is, if USLEC or Paytech or one of these other three carriers was going to use this ruling to now begin to take business away from Global Maps, I think they would wait until these proceedings are over to do that. I don't think what they would have done is create fodder for me to say, look, this is not just threatened harm, this is actual harm. But I do believe the concern is there, and I do believe it's a real concern.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Stathis. Mr. Collin?
Good morning, and may it please the Court. My name is John Collin on behalf of the Appellee and Veteran Possessions, Starnet, Inc. With me at council table is Mr. Michael Silberman, who was with me on brief. Your Honors, to pick up a thread of discussion on the threatened harm to Global Maps from the porting injunction, let me step back and place this in a procedural context. This is an appeal from a denial of a stay of an injunction. There's a record below, and in that record below, GNAPS had the opportunity to try to prove or demonstrate that there would be some kind of irreparable harm to it, or at any rate, a harm that would outweigh the harm to Starnet of not granting the injunction.
Well, I don't understand your legal position. Seems to me you had a contract with Global, and you basically asked the bankruptcy court to rewrite the contract.
No, sir. We asked the bankruptcy court to reject the contract.
No, but you still have the benefit of it. You still have your numbers.
Your Honor, the...
If you reject the contract, just go to some other carrier and get new numbers.
Well, we...
What you wanted was affirmative obligations imposed on Global to port the numbers, and that's not achieved just by rejecting the contract.
That's correct, but it is also the case that we did not modify the contract. We entered into new contracts with new carriers and then continued
to use the numbers. Why shouldn't the bankruptcy court have required the parties to obtain an FCC determination of the portability issue and then proceeded with the determination of how that result would work within the bankruptcy framework rather than trying to decide an issue on which the bankruptcy court had no expertise?
Your Honor, I think the bankruptcy court has the power to decide matters involving property of the estate.
The numbers aren't property of the estate. That's about as clear as can be.
But Judge Easterbrook, the right to use the numbers is property.
No,
but that's just, that's just dependent on your contract. And it's one thing to reject an executory contract, and you get out from under the burdens, but of course you also don't have any benefits. But here you want to keep the benefits of the contract and get out of the burdens, so that the bankruptcy court has actually revised the entitlements conferred by the contract.
Well, Your Honor, I do not believe it's a revision of a contract.
Well, it certainly is. It certainly is, because it was a contract. You got numbers in exchange for, you know, various things, and now you want to keep the numbers and not pay for it.
If Your Honor's view on that is unalterable, then I would say that the modification was a justified one under appropriate bankruptcy principles and FCC principles of promoting competition.
I don't think the bankruptcy courts have that power. I don't understand that. Bankruptcy courts can't say, look, we feel sorry for you, debtor, and therefore we're going to give you some additional assets.
Yeah, and by requiring Global to court these numbers, isn't Starnet asking the bankruptcy court to take away Global's right not to port numbers?
I don't believe it has an inherent right not to port numbers. The FCC
I don't know
does
what
not
inherent
prohibit.
Is. It's got a right under the regulations. Right. What the bankruptcy judge said pretty clearly is, I don't know much about the regulations. I'm just ordering Global to do this anyway. And there doesn't appear to be anything in bankruptcy law that entitles debtors to the benefit of orders to disregard federal regulation.
Well, Your Honor, there's several premises there. One is that there's not a disregard of any federal regulation if this is not an example of location portability, or if it's not prohibited by the FCC. I think we've argued with some persuasiveness, and Your Honor's colloquy with appellant's counsel earlier really demonstrates that this is not an example of prohibited location portability.
Maybe what it demonstrates is that we need to refer this to the FCC under its primary jurisdiction to find out whether the FCC thinks there's a difference between wireless and wireline portability.
Particularly because it seems that although you disagree with Global about the correct definition of location, you also don't completely agree with the bankruptcy court's definition of location.
Well,
so somebody's got to come up with
a
definition that, you know, you're happy with.
We can certainly agree with the result, Your Honor. The court, I think, has made clear that primary jurisdiction kicks in one of two circumstances, and there is no fixed formula. One of those circumstances is where there's exclusive jurisdiction with the regulatory agency. That's not the case here. These numbers, or more accurately, Starnet's interest in using the numbers, is clearly under the exclusive in rem jurisdiction of the bankruptcy court under 28 U.S.C. 1334E. The other circumstance is one where
in your brief. I don't understand this idea that the bankruptcy court has in rem jurisdiction over the numbers. That assumes that the numbers are property of the estate, which they aren't. They aren't private property of anyone. And your position is awfully hard to reconcile with the Supreme Court's decision in Next Wave, where an identical argument was considered and rejected by the justices.
Your Honor, I'll try to restate it as clearly as I can. It's the right or interest in using the numbers, not the outright ownership of the numbers, which is property of the estate. And I think that's been held in a number of district-level decisions in this
circuit. Yeah, but
what
you can't do, you can't say that the bankrupt's estate consists of every contractual benefit that the bankrupt has, and that these can be stripped from the liabilities in the same contract.
Your Honor, the individual numbers don't inhere in the contract. The contract was simply to provide data or PRI services between Starnet and GlobalNet and Alliant.
And if you reject that,
and if
they have no need to provide you with any data or services.
That's correct.
Or any numbers.
But the numbers can be ported. The numbers can be ported because
that's the issue.
They can't be ported under the contract. Rejecting a contract doesn't create any rights. So where does the right to porting come from? If it comes from a federal regulation, that's fine, but now we're in the non-bankruptcy world and need to figure out what the regulation provides.
Well, I think the regulations that have been cited, including the most recent November 10th decision, make it clear that this is not an issue of location portability, and that really segues into the second reason why primary jurisdiction doesn't obtain here for the FCC, which is that there's no special, unique regulatory aspect of this that is beyond the expertise or competence of this court. This is not an issue.
Well, but your argument is, isn't it, that the provision in the contract that doesn't allow, the failure of the contract to allow porting is a violation of FCC regulations?
That would also be correct, Your Honor, if there was a restriction on porting, which is otherwise mandatorily permissible by FCC regulations, then that would not be an enforceable contract.
Tell me if I'm right here. Under your definition of location portability, any person who moves, let's say from Lincoln Park to Lakeview, in other words, within the same calling area, would be entitled to keep the same telephone number?
Right. I think the...
Well, that's sort of a yes or no.
The answer is yes. And the reason is...
Well, then what about the statement from the FCC's website
that
states that consumers cannot keep their numbers if they move across town?
Because that is a ill-phrased statement that doesn't take into account the defining criterion of what is location, and the defining criterion is staying in the same rate area.
The idea that if we should just assume that the FCC itself, on its own website, doesn't understand its own regulations or know what it's talking about, is a pretty serious position, that you understand what the FCC is talking about, but the FCC doesn't understand what it's talking about.
I believe that when it used the phrase across town, it was speaking in a colloquial manner for easy access by general consumers. The more refined analysis that occurs in the regulations clearly deals with whether or not call goes outside of a rate center. And portability within rate centers is clearly
But wouldn't it be sensible to have the FCC decide this? After all, they've had many opportunities to say, you know, just this, and they haven't, so they must have some reservations. So whether you call it primary jurisdiction or anything else, why isn't it sensible to get the views of the FCC? Did anyone ask them to file an amicus brief?
Not that I'm aware of, Your Honor. We certainly did not. I think there are three reasons. One is that they are clear now with the most recent ruling.
Well, you didn't know that, of course.
I agree that when this was commenced, the issue was perhaps a little more open than it is now, but I firmly believe we were on solid ground from the time the complaint was filed. Secondly, as I said earlier, it's not such a uniquely difficult issue that only the FCC can address what is meant by that regulation. It's an issue of law that, frankly, I'd feel more comfortable having an Article III tribunal decide. And finally,
well, a bankruptcy judge is in Article III.
Well,
he's
been reviewed by Article III tribunals, both in the district court and here. Finally, there is an issue of expedition. Bankruptcies do create the externalities of urgency to adjudicate and resolve controversies to enable a reorganization to timely occur. Otherwise, you have a risk of self-liquidation. Our best information, and there was no way we could confirm this through any published source, was that it would take a great deal more time, perhaps as long as a year, to go through FCC procedures rather than raising this with the bankruptcy court. The intertwining, incidentally, of the bankruptcy issue...
It's not clear to me why there's anything wrong with that. GlobalNAFS made an offer that it would continue to provide the service at its numbers at the same price you were able to get from somebody else. And what's wrong with that as a means of going forward while the FCC gives an opinion on portability.
Well, what they offered was remote call forwarding, which is not the equivalent of porting. It leaves them in control of the numbers. It involves duplicate lines, which can interfere with call quality. It simply was not the technical equivalent, nor was it the financial equivalent.
I thought the offer, at least the offer as it was phrased to us, was the offer that MobileNet itself would provide the service just exactly as before, but at the price that matched what StarNet had been quoted by MobileNet's MobileNet's rivals.
Right, and that also had quite a twist to it, because the other carriers that we switched to, USLEC, Paytech, and ICG, provide significant volume discounts. So that in order to...
Well, there may be a dispute about what that price is,
right?
But assuming we can get that resolved, what's the problem?
Well, the problem, Your Honor, is that it inhibits the reorganization because we don't get to move on to the new carriers. It results in an inability to port, which we think we had the right to do, and which I believe the FCC really concurs with, because this is not location portability. If I could just finish, there was one other element to this, which was a reason that makes sense in a business world where you're trying to reorganize a business, and that is that the relationship between GNAPS and StarNet had really become toxic. We were in a situation where GNAPS was trying to keep us by adhesion to contracts that were twice the market rate. We were unable to negotiate a solution. In a business world, I submit to your honors, you don't remain in a relationship like that when you're trying to rehabilitate your entire business and restructure your network along the entire East Coast. Now, that was a factor that the bankruptcy judge took note of, and it realized that it's perhaps more mundane than the factors often brought before this court, but it was a very significant one. Judge Robin, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I think you probably just answered my question, because what I was going to ask you was, couldn't you, forget the relationship, later on, and if not, forget, the relationship now and switch carriers as soon as the issue was resolved. But I think you've answered it with that last statement that there's a toxic relationship. So
the practicalities are very important in these kinds of reorganizations. Let me also, if I may, just to, in the few moments I have remaining, mention two threshold issues. On the issue of contempt, which Your Honor raised with Mr. Spathis, it is not the case that GNAPS has complied with the contempt order, the order that required the deposit of funds. So while they have complied with the injunction, and they were held in contempt of that injunction, the contempt order itself required acts that have not yet been accomplished, and that, in fact, is a finding to that effect in an order entered on November 10th.
Answer would be that they're not currently in full compliance with the injunction?
Well, they are in compliance with the injunction, but not with the order that found them in contempt of the injunction and required them to deposit money as security against damages. And there's going to be a damages trial later next week. They have defied another court order. And I leave it to this court to determine whether that equitably bars them from seeking the aid and relief of this
You're
court.
You're set for trial next week?
On December 8th, Your Honor, there will be a hearing on the amount of damages arising from contempt.
Yeah.
What is the legal basis for requiring a party to post a bond before there's been any determination of the existence of damages?
The basis is that the court has the equitable power to assure that there will be
Actually, the Supreme Court considered that possibility about 3 years ago and held that there's no such power. That's Grupo Mexicano against Desarrollo.
Right.
Said judges don't have any such power.
I think that was
now
a
it sounds like, as you described it, the bankruptcy judge has done something the Supreme Court has said judges can't do.
Your Honor, I think Grupo Mexicano, which came out of the Second Circuit, was a prejudgment.
No, it came out of the Supreme Court of the United States.
With a prejudgment attachment under various New York statutes. This was not a prejudgment attachment, as I understand it. I would draw that distinction based on my recollection of the Grupo Mexicano case.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Collins. Mr. Stathis, we'll give you a minute.
Thank you.
Do you have anything exciting to say?
Thank you, Your Honor. With respect to the most recent order relating to wireline to wireless porting, I'd invite the court's attention to paragraph 11, where I believe it makes a distinction between the two types and the two very different animals, and also undermines, I believe, counsel's construction that location is really not what the plain language suggests and is somehow the rate center or the call center. I believe we've cited in our brief and that various provisions in the notices and the initial notice that set the whole process in motion is akin to legislative history that pretty much eviscerates the notion that physical location means a rate center. But with respect to the more recent order, I'd invite the court's attention to paragraph 11. And lastly, I believe Your Honor has raised...
What in paragraph 11 do you find significant?
Well, it states that because a wireline service is fixed to a specific location, the subscriber's telephone number is limited to a use within the rate center. It is not that the location is the rate center.
We've already been through that.
Okay.
I don't understand why that is significant, since the portability does not... Portability means that the former wireline carrier hands off or terminates the call at a different location. How the customer deals with the wireless carrier has nothing to do with the question that I can see. Now, if you can explain some reason why the relation between the former wireline carrier and its customer has some, you know, some bearing on what the customer is going to do with the wireless carrier, is there some reason?
I don't know what the answer to that question is. The FCC, when it issued this recent order, could have easily said, in light of the fact that we are now going to require porting as long as it's in the rate center, we are going to mandate location portability. But it hasn't, and I don't believe it's fair to just say that because they're prepared to do it in this wireline to wireless that it is not going to, that it naturally is making the next step. I think the appropriate step is to take this to the FCC, and so it is clear, we are offering anything that provides adequate security. We will provide service at the discounted rate, and that can factor in volume discounts, or we will provide remote call forwarding, which the FCC, which case authority, which their own expert has indicated is a great interim step to provide portability.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you
very much. This case for argument.